Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and it's my pleasure and privilege to present to you once again Dr. Nick Begich, along with Gene Manning, the author of Angels Don't Play This Harp, with two A's, subtitled Advances in Tesla Technology. This is published in softcover by the Earth Pulse Press and copyright 1995. Dr. Begich, welcome once again to our airwaves.
Hi, it's good to be with you again.
This project, which you have been pursuing in a journalistic and research sense, has been described, by way of review for listeners that may not have heard some of our earlier broadcasts or are not familiar with Project HARP. First of all, we might as well start with the name. It's an acronym.
Right. It stands for High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project, and it's a joint project of the Air Force and Navy operating here in Alaska.
And we've discussed in the past some of the many applications or potential applications of this technology, and the projection that this would, Project HARP that is, would constitute a revolution in military affairs, or RMA. Could I perhaps ask the impossible of you, Dr. Begich, to not only address the RMA, but also perhaps give us, as best you can in a short period of time, an understanding of Nikola Tesla's technology, because that is in many ways at the foundation of these various applications, and will provide in turn some foundation for subsequent discussion.
Sure. The revolution in military affairs was a concept first fielded by the U.S. Army War College and then later advanced by Pentagon think tankers and others. But basically what it implies is that the nature of warfare is changing so dramatically. They equate it to the introduction of gunpowder to the West or atomic weapons earlier this century. And what they suggest is that this new revolution in weapon systems, basically electromagnetic systems and acoustic systems and others of a similar nature, are really more or less invisible systems of electromagnetic radiation that can cause disruption of human physiology, can create changes in our immediate environment, and can be used for knocking out electronics on various kinds of craft. So this is a new type of warfare, and it really does go back to Nikola Tesla, who had these concepts around the turn of the century. Tesla was a brilliant, brilliant scientist, probably one of the most underrated in terms of history of scientists that ever lived. He was responsible for the development, for instance, of AC current and transmission systems, what most of our houses and businesses run on today. And he was also a visionary in terms of electromagnetic systems. He did a number of experiments and demonstrated that, in fact, you could use weapons technologies based on electromagnetic pulses and other concepts for doing such things as knocking out electronics, for modifying the environment, as well as other factors that are now being, again, explored by our military.
Tesla actually was the person who invented radio, was he not, although Marconi got the patents?
Absolutely. In fact, Tesla demonstrated it quite a bit in advance of Marconi. He used a remote control boat in Central Park in New York City, and eventually he was able to win that place in history by a U.S. Supreme Court decision. But even so, very few equate radio with an invention of Tesla's, although he indeed was the founder, the discoverer of that technology.
So indeed, this broadcast itself owes its existence in part to Nikola Tesla. Tesla's work is not particularly well known by most people, at least in part, Dr. Begich, because it has been suppressed. He died in 1943. Much of his research is still classified.
That's correct. At the point of his death, the story goes that the FBI and perhaps others came into his apartment in New York and really grabbed everything and pretty much took it away. And there's been, here and there since that time, little bits and pieces and rumor mostly about his technology, although as it relates to the HARP project, his name actually appears as reference points within some of the patents. So it, really does hook back in whether he was, his ideas specifically were being used or whether he just provided that inspirational spark to the inventor is somewhat questionable, but nonetheless, Tesla's name continues to show up wherever new weapons technologies of this type are discussed.
Now, in as briefly as you can you give us some idea of what it was that Tesla worked on that is being applied in terms of Project HARP?
Sure. I mean, a number of things, actually. Number one, the idea that you can use this kind of system for focusing radio frequency energy for knocking out electronics on aircraft. This was something that Tesla thought could be done, and that HAARP planners are actually building to demonstrate and are demonstrating that it can be done. One of the other things that Tesla spoke about was power beaming, the idea of transferring electrical energy from one point on the planet to another wirelessly. Some modification of perhaps what Tesla envisioned is being applied here. The concept certainly is the idea of beaming energy from one place to another is actually three of the patents surrounding this project. And then the idea of creating bolts of electromagnetic energy or focused pulsed electromagnetic energy, this is another concept that's being fielded by HAARP. HAARP planners, in fact, is part of the program itself and does go back to some of the original ideas of Tesla again.
Now, for listeners that are grappling with these concepts and wondering how such things could be, Dr. Begich, could you briefly perhaps refer people to some other sources that researchers could gain some background about Tesla's technology?
You know, there's a couple of good books. If any library would have them under the topic Tesla, but you would also might find some interest in this area. There is a Tesla Society based in Colorado Springs, Colorado, that has a whole array of books and materials related to Tesla's work. So that's certainly out there. Yeah, I think the other place a person would look for these kinds of concepts in terms of military, I would point you in the direction of a document called Low Intensity Conflict in Modern Technology, which was produced by Maxwell Air Force Base and is available through interlibrary loan through major libraries that really get into some of this technology. And then there's a new document that just came out. It's called New World Vistas, Air and Space Power for the 21st Century. And they have an ancillary volume which has some pretty startling ideas in terms of what's coming in the next century in terms of the Air Force.
The technology, in our earlier discussions, and we've had two other interviews of an hour in length, some of the applications of this technology that we've discussed in the past involved interfering with the electronics of machines in flight, whether aircraft or missiles. It's been envisioned as a missile defense. We've spoken about that. We've spoken about using it also to affect deep Earth tomography, to peer deep into the Earth to perform reconnaissance on installations that are very far underground. It could also be used to look for minerals. Some of the applications that we've discussed that are most horrifying and that also offer the possibilities of accidental misuse or accidental catastrophe, something I want to get into at some length, involve, first of all, weather control. Now, we've touched on this in the past. Could you perhaps, as briefly as possible, sum up some of the weather control applications? Because this is in an area that a lot of people will view as the realm of science fiction.
Sure. The issue of weather control goes back a long ways. In fact, the U.S. and over 60 other countries in around 1976 signed off on an accord where we wouldn't use weather modification or geophysical modification as a weapon of war. And this whole idea of weather modification has come up again recently in the last couple years within Pentagon think tanks as being something that they want to revisit because the technology has advanced to the point where they really believe that now is the time to bring on this technology. Now, with HAARP, within the patents themselves, they talk about the potential uses for weather modification. One of the program managers, when he was interviewed on national television in Canada, talked about what it would take to modify the weather, and what he was suggesting in terms of power levels correlates with the power levels that HAARP eventually will produce. But even at this stage, where it is today, it potentially has the ability to lift the ionosphere several hundred kilometers up. And when you think of the ionosphere, this is a layer that starts at about 30 miles above the Earth's surface and goes on for several hundred kilometers. And if you can lift an area, say, 30 kilometers in diameter and a couple hundred kilometers high, lift it up, and the lower atmosphere rushes in to fill that void, thereby changing weather patterns over a fairly large area. Another thing that came up recently along that same line, and this was real interesting, is because when you have, for instance, say a comet coming into our atmosphere, normally they break up at the very high reaches of the atmosphere, so by the time they would normally get down to the Earth's surface, they're gone or they're completely dissipated.
Comet or meteorite?
I'm speaking of comets and meteorites generally. They start to break up at a high elevation when they hit the atmosphere because they're coming in at a very quick velocity. And when they hit, that at that velocity atmosphere, they just it immediately create drag and they start to break up. But if you could lift, say, an area of the atmosphere up so you get another couple hundred kilometers between you and that incoming object, it would give a additional time to break that object up. And we had heard bits and pieces about this use of HARP, but had never given it much serious consideration until we received a fax, which was actually a summary from a Russian atmospheric physicist discussing exactly this very thing in terms of opening up the ionosphere to provide more distance between the surface of the Earth and the upper reaches of the atmosphere to give time for these kinds of objects to break up. So it's an interesting application, and one that we previously, at least, in fact, this is the first radio broadcast where we've mentioned that particular use.
The anti-missile defenses had been discussed as possibly having an anti-meteorite or anti-asteroid capability to save the Earth from a fate like the dinosaurs endured, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, and you know that's been out there, but we just didn't have anything in hard copy that could confirm it until recently.
One of the more terrifying possible applications of Project HARP concerns the use of it as a mind control weapon. Mind control projects are a matter of public record as a major focal point of national security research in this and other countries for a half century. And on page 189 of Angels Don't Play This HARP, you and Gene Manning quote the U.S. Air Force's Radio Frequency Radiation Dosimetry Handbook as follows. And on page 89, you quote, "While initial attention should be toward degradation of human performance through thermal loading and electromagnetic field effects, subsequent work should address the possibilities of directing and interrogating mental functioning using externally applied fields within the possibility of a revolutionary capability to defend against hostile actions and to collect intelligence data prior to conflict onset." This sounds very much like being able to direct and read the minds, either directly or indirectly, of human beings in a population group from a remote place, possibly space.
That is correct, and that does show up in official Air Force documents once again. And you know, this is and that's a relatively older document. As a matter of fact, you know, when we look at the newest material in terms of what's coming, it's even more startling than that. But my own personal belief is that they are already well on their way, if not already possessing a great deal of this. We certainly know that they have the capability of influencing the moods of people remotely. This was demonstrated at Yale University. We quote a number of sources, as you know, within the book that really lay out where that information comes from. But the thing that comes out most startling is this newest document, New World Vistas, Air and Space Power for the 21st Century. And if I could, I'll read a couple of lines about what the Air Force suggests is probably coming in the next century, if it's not already here now.
Alrighty, fine.
The first sentence is, "One can envision the development of an electromagnetic energy source as the output of which can be pulsed, shaped, and focused, that can be coupled with the human body in a fashion that will allow one to prevent voluntary muscular movement, control emotions and thus actions, produce sleep, transmit suggestions, interfere with both long and short-term memory, produce an experience set, and delete an experience set." It then goes on to say, "It would also appear possible to create high-fidelity speech in the human body, raising the possibility of covert suggestion and psychological direction. With a high-power microwave pulse in the gigahertz range strikes the human body, a very small temperature perpetration occurs. This is associated with a sudden expansion of the slightly heated tissue. This expansion is fast enough to produce an acoustic wave. If a pulse stream is used, it should be possible to create an internal acoustic field in the 5 to 15 kilohertz range, which is audible. Thus, it may be possible to talk to selected adversaries in a fashion that would be most disturbing to them." I mean, think about that as a concept. This is the Air Force saying, hey, isn't this neat? Look what we're going to have for the next century. And I think most Americans would agree, and most people around the world will agree, that this is one technology that certainly the military or any other governmental agency ought not to have.
And there have also been researchers such as Harlan Gerard out of Philadelphia, and there's also a woman who's a veteran of Army intelligence whose name escapes me just off the top of my head, who've done some work on the development of those types of technologies, and we are a lot closer to those sorts of things. Some of those actually appear to be operational or in an advanced state of research and development.
Absolutely. In fact, Harlan Girard's work has been outstanding over the years, and I do believe that these technologies aren't necessarily just shaped for the next century. I do believe they're here now, and there's plenty of evidence suggesting it. There's even a large number of people that have contacted us over the last couple of years suggesting that they're even the victims of this kind of experimentation, none of which would surprise me. I mean, normally when you start seeing things appear in the literature, it's because they're already well on their way if they're not already here yet.
One of the phrases that you quoted, one of the sentences that you quoted that sounds really ominous, and I can't do it from memory, but it's something like creating or removing entire memory sets at will.
Yeah, this is a scary thing in the terms of, you know, what that implies. I mean, this is the idea that, you know, to wash away your memory and put in something new artificially, either individually or even perhaps in mass, this is not the kind of thing that anyone should be toying with, quite frankly. And the idea that they even believe it's possible should be of concern to everyone. You know, this kind of weapons technology, certainly in an early stage, the stage that we're at now, it ought to be debated. And I believe that if it were debated within the political context, it would never advance. Part of the problem is how much is hidden behind the National Security Act, which really is the root of the problem for this project and many others like it.
It sounds, if I'm understanding the implications of that passage correctly, it sounds almost like people's memories and beyond that their personalities and entire population groups could be manipulated, like taking CDs or cassettes out of a machine and playing others.
That's a good analogy, and I think that expresses the idea that's within the context of that work.
Another one of the projected applications or possible applications of Project HAARP that we spoke about in our last conversation involved something called cyclotronic resonance and its use to alter the body chemistry of human beings. And again, we're talking about an instrumentality that would be applied from space through electromagnetic radiation. And cyclotronic resonance could be used to kill people, to wipe out the human immune system by using electromagnetic radiation at a great distance.
Sure. I mean, the main issue here is, you know, if you want to debilitate someone, for instance, there's lots of ways to do it using electromagnetic means. I mean, if you, for instance, every human being has certain trace elements that in and of themselves as trace elements are not a problem. I mean, they're essential for life. But if you resonate an energy power source into the human body that corresponds with that trace element, and what it does is essentially fool the body into believing that it's being invaded by a large amount of this chemical, which becomes then a toxin. So the body begins to react as it does, and the consequence is you have all the symptoms of chemical poisoning, high-level toxicity, and yet there's nothing that shows up in the blood work, and it's the interaction of the elements already existing in the body with the electromagnetic fields. And this is, again, an area that the military, in an article that I quoted earlier, has actually explored as a possible new weapons technology. In fact, they've even shown some of these technologies in their discussions on non-lethal weapons, or what they call non-lethal weapons.
One of the possible applications, and this is speculative, that we've kicked around at some length, we delved into this at some length in our last interview, and that is utilizing this technology to create earthquakes. And this is a subject that I personally have been subjected to some derision in regard to, and yet it's not nearly as far-fetched as it might seem.
That's correct. In fact, the whole idea of earthquake generation, at least in the public literature that I've found, goes back to the work of J.F. Gordon MacDonald, who was a geophysicist at UCLA and a specialist in problems of warfare. He was also a science advisor to Johnson. But even more recently, you know, back then he suggested you could trigger earthquakes with electromagnetic means. And now today we have U.S. Secretary of Defense, who is giving actually a lecture. And this lecture was April 28, 1997, and it was given University of Georgia, Athens, Georgia. And what he said in the context of that speech was there was a Q&A, question and answers at the end, and he was talking about new threats in terms of terrorism, and he talked, I'll just quote him. He says, and I quote, "Others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes and volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves," unquote. I mean, this is the current Secretary of Defense this year making that comment and suggesting that terrorist organizations have that capability. And what we have suggested, and we suggest again, is that our own government not only has the capability, but certainly is able to deploy it at this particular time. Whether they use HAARP for that or some other means, we believe that they've figured out that science long ago. And going even further, Brooks Agnew, who's a specialist in earth-penetrating tomography, suggests that inadvertently it may be one of the things that comes out of this earth-penetrating tomography part of HAARP. In other words, looking into the Earth several kilometers using ELF with the power levels that HAARP would use, if they hit the right trigger frequencies, the HAARP will act like a primer on a bullet, releasing a huge amount of energy in the form of an earth disturbance. And this is something that Brooks Agnew, as an expert in his field, certainly believes is possible with HAARP.
One of the things that is most disturbing about this technology, and obviously the intended applications are terrifying enough, they're, at least for me personally, at the frontier of perception or conception. Something like cyclotronic resonance, aside from the difficulty in understanding the physical concepts, the prospects are so terrifying, they're almost overwhelming. And yet, when placed side by side with some of the possible unintended side effects of this technology, which I'd like to focus on for much of the duration of not only this side, but the next half hour of our interview, it becomes almost trivial. One of the things that you and your co-author and some of the experts that you reference in Angels Don't Play This Harp talk about is some of the unintended side effects of this technology. Why don't we start with some of the possible side effects on biological organisms, human and otherwise?
Sure. One of the things that we talk about and we mention frequently is the idea that this system could in fact interfere with migration patterns of various species. And there's a lot of debate, in biological circles in terms of what constitutes the impetus for migration, whether it be geographic orientation relative to landmarks and gravity and sunlight and so on, or whether in fact it's something more subtle than that, whether they're navigating based on electromagnetic lines of force that naturally surround the Earth. And, in each of these migrating species, or at least many of them now, they've found a mineral called magnetite within the brains of these species. And magnetite is electromagnetically active, and there's some thought that perhaps this is part of that orienting mechanism that allows species to move from one place to another on the planet with relative ease. When you think about it, the magnetic lines of force have been disturbed in recent years, over the last 20 years or so, by both natural and man-made causes. And corresponding to that, you have some real strange things. You have whales and dolphins beaching, falling, sort of like running right into the land as if they were following a line that all of a sudden land got in the way. And that would really describe what would happen if, in fact, migration patterns were being directed that way. In our personal belief, in fact, studies have shown that this is, in fact, the case with migrations, that there is this orientation. So HAARP will interfere with that to some degree. Depending on the intensity and the time of year, it could be devastating to many populations that depend upon migratory species for their food and sustenance, particularly in subarctic and arctic regions.
How about some of the possible unintended side effects on the human animal?
Absolutely, and this is a couple of things that come to mind. First of all, in the earth-penetrating tomography application and the communications applications, which use an extremely low frequency, when we were asking John Heckscher, the program manager for HAARP, about that in preparing the book, he said a couple of things. First, he said that the power densities returning to the Earth would be approximately the same as the Earth naturally produces, with the only difference being that the energy from HAARP would be coherent in the 1 to 20 hertz range, or pulses per second range. Well, from his perspective, that may be harmless, but from research that has shown at Yale and other places is that energy 1/50th that strong is sufficient in those frequency ranges to change the behavior of primates and humans almost like turning on and off a light switch, like from angry to passive, and so on. And this particular frequency range correlates to the predominant brain waves of human beings, from deep sleep to normal walking states, just on the side of not being totally agitated, but in a real high emotional state. So you've got a system that externally has the power and the frequency range, if it hits very specific frequencies, to influence the behavior of humans, either purposefully or accidentally. In addition to that, the whole idea that this energy could in fact correspond or harmonize, resonate with trace elements within the body, as we were discussing earlier, could in fact trigger chemical reactions and induce illness in human beings that would be physically ill from the results of this kind of experimentation. Again, accidentally or purposefully, in any case, it could be quite devastating.
Dr. Begich, we are almost finished with this side of the tape. What I'm going to do is to give the address for Earth Pulse, because some of the stations that air my program only play a half hour at a time. We've been speaking with Dr. Nick Begich, who, along with Gene Manning, is the author of Angels Don't Play This Harp, subtitled Advances in Tesla Technology, published in softcover by the Earth Pulse Press. And the address is Post Office Box 201393, Anchorage, Alaska. Now, Alaska's abbreviated AK, is it not, in our postal system?
That's correct.
Anchorage, Alaska, zip code 99520 USA. Once again, Earth Pulse Press, P.O. Box 201393, Anchorage, Alaska, 99520. And what I'd also like to ask you to do, Dr. Begich, is to give perhaps a website address and or email or other ways that people could contact you to find out more about this.
Sure. The web address is www.earthpulse.com, and another ordering number would be 907-249-9111. And the book is $17.95, and that includes the air freight.
We can't mention prices on the air, but if I could ask you to repeat the website address and the phone number as well.
Sure. The website address is www.earthpulse.com, and the phone number is area code 907-249-9111.
We've been speaking with Dr. Nick Begich, the co-author of Angels Don't Play This Harp, and in the next half hour of our interview, we're going to continue with a discussion of some of the possible unintended and exceedingly unpleasant, possibly catastrophic side effects of this projected technology. For Nick Begich, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.